Welcome to In His Footsteps with practical tips to living a joy-filled life and amazing interviews with people who do. Be sure to visit our website, inhisfootsteps.com. I'm Margaret Agard, the award-winning author of the book series In His Footsteps. Today I'll be talking with Charles Pattison, who works with safepassage.org. Safe Passage was started by Hanley Denning in 1997 to work with the poorest of the poor, the children who live in the dump in Guatemala. Hanley Denning was a school teacher in her late 20s, and she went down to Guatemala to learn to speak Spanish so she could communicate better with her Spanish-speaking students. While she was down there learning to speak Spanish, a friend took her to see a village located by the dump in Guatemala City. And there she found, in the most dangerous and abhorrent circumstances, children who lived with their mothers in the dump, trying to scrounge up food, to recycle things, to get some money, and who lived in little tin shacks. At one point, there was a huge fire that killed many people in the dump. It was a terrible tragedy. When Hanley saw the conditions of these children and found out there was a little abandoned church nearby that she could use, she called her family and said, "Sell my computer, sell my car, send me the money. I'm going to stay down here." And then she began her work. I love that. I love that she just said, "I'll just start with what I have. I'll just do what I can do." And the first thing she did was convince the families to send their children to school by offering to give each day that the children showed up for school enough beans and rice for the families to have dinner that night. Eventually, this has grown into a huge project, and we're going to be talking today with Charles Pattison, who volunteers with safepassage.org and has been volunteering down there for the last 7 years. Now, don't they have public schools down there?
They have, yes, and that's the whole purpose of Safe Passage, is to get the kids out of the dump and into school. And the public school cost a lot of money because of their fees. You have to buy a uniform, you have to have books, and you have to pay a lot of fees during the course of the school year just to stay in school.
So it's not really like our public schools. It's not, you could just go there.
The schools are very poor, especially the low-end schools. If you're good enough and can afford it, you can go to an upper-level school. But for Hanley's kids, they can't all do that. She does have some kids in upper-level or in a better school, let's say it that way, who scored well enough and who are able to do that. But, of course, those schools cost more money, and a lot of the better schools are private. But in most of Latin America, school is only a half-day affair. So there's a morning session and an afternoon session. So what Hanley's project does is the morning kids that go to school then come to her in the afternoon, and vice versa. And they've worked it out. Last summer when I went, they've worked it out so that they have about half their kids going in the morning and half the kids coming in the afternoon. And they get lunch when they either go to her in the morning and get lunch and then go to school, or go to school, come to her, get lunch, and then stay with her. And in their classrooms, they do, they go beyond school. They do a remedial. They take the homework that the kids are doing. They teach them English. They teach them music. They teach them computer skills.
But how many people live in the dump, do you think?
The estimates, and that's really hard.
Yeah.
The estimates that I've seen is that there are 50,000 people that live in the vicinity of the dump and have some association with it, either directly or indirectly. And I've also seen the estimate there are 3,000 people that work directly in the dump and to recycle. But the other people then, the extended families and the people that support the people that work in the dump,
right.
That community is about 50,000 people.
Hmm.
And it's primarily right there. You know, there are people that run little stores. There are people that, you know, because all of that garbage comes out of the dump to be recycled and it's stored in buildings all around. And, you know, people work on that every day as people haul it out of the dump. You know, there's a real trade going on there.
Okay.
I have yet to learn where the recycled stuff goes, but it seems to go somewhere. 75% of the garbage of Guatemala, of the country, Guatemala, goes in that dump.
How do people end up living in the dump? I don't understand that at all.
There's really two things about Guatemala that make it, in our mindset, very different. Most of the land, 90-some percent of the land, and most of the economy, like 80% of the income of the country, is controlled and owned by a very small percentage. And we're talking 5 or 6% maybe, if that much.
Hmm.
Or very large corporations like United Brands. They're all U.S. corporations. We control Guatemala. And the wages are pitiful. You know, there are no unions. Everything is controlled by the government. And the other thing that happened, and the second part of this, is between 1980 and 1995, what happened was that the United States was extremely afraid that there were communists in the mountains, like the Sandinistas in El Salvador and the Contras in Nicaragua, and they were convinced that there were guerrillas everywhere. And so we supplied the army. The army is the power in Guatemala, and we supplied them with weapons, guns, planes, and they went on a rampage against the people in the mountains because that's where they thought the guerrillas were living. And there were some. I mean, there probably were a couple thousand guerrillas. But, you know, they went on a rampage. 200,000 people estimated, you know, died in all of that, mostly in the highlands where the Mayans live. And so what happened was that all of those people, you know, their villages were burned. They had nowhere to go. And so they fled to the city, Guatemala City. Guatemala City grew from 1 million people to 2 million people in that 15-year time frame. Well, they all came to the city. They had nowhere to live. They had no money. They had no training. They had no education. And so, you know, it's a squatter city. You can buy, you know, a small apartment probably for $50,000 or $60,000. But, I mean, these people make $1 a day.
Right.
They live in poverty. And so the population around the dump grew because that was a place that they could go and make money. And they eat out of the dump, a lot of them. You know, they know when the McDonald's truck comes. You know, they get clothing out of the dump. They get stuff. Many people in Guatemala, I don't even think, realize the dump is there. If they do, they don't care. But over the years, the dump, quite honestly, has become more organized. It when we first started going in 2002, it was wide open. There were no walls. You could just walk right in. It was extremely dangerous, health-wise and from a gang standpoint, because, you know, they muscle their way in to claim parts of the dump, to claim, you know, to be a part of the plastic gang or to be part of the copper gang. And so it's a tough place. There's lots of drugs, glue especially. There's a lot of, you know, women do most of the work in the dump. The men are that get stoned all the time and you know, rape the women, just about. I would call it rape. The women are just, you know, they have no power.
So that explains why Hanley wanted to work with these single moms. I was thinking, well, why not work with the dads? You know, in the United States, we've kind of destroyed the nuclear family because all the support goes to single moms.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and that's a machismo culture too. That's just Latin America, and women have very little status, and they're, you know, and these people don't have an education. And they just do what seems now. We were there like 2004, 2005, and they were having a big campaign in the country to teach people to wash their hands.
So is it working? Is what her vision, I think, was
absolutely.
To get the... Okay, how's it working?
Absolutely.
What's happening?
It is working. They have kids now that are attending university. They have kids that are in better upper-level secondary schools, you know, private academies. They have, Guadalupe is up and running.
That's the young kids. That's the kindergarten.
The middle school kids, you know, they recognize you when you go back each year. Their English is getting better. They're at it. You know, they're just, you can just tell that they're learning. They'll talk to you about legitimate things. More and more of the kids are learning enough English that you can, you know, they will have a commodity to help themselves. More and more of the kids are getting to secondary school, which will give them a diploma and will get them into training programs. And they'll be able to take those skills and get a real job.
Hanley had some impressive goals for this project, and fortunately, she got a lot of other people involved and committed just as she was, because in 2007, in her mid-30s, Hanley Denning was killed in a tragic car accident in Guatemala. But her work continues. Her supporters have created a DVD of the work that goes on down there so that people can meet some of the people who are participating and find out how their lives have been affected by this work of Hanley Denning, safepassage.org. And you can find out more about, in fact, get a free copy of that DVD at safepassage.org. Sounds as if Hanley's goals to get the children on track is going right on schedule. She also wanted to get the mothers out of the dump. How's that going?
About 4 years ago, a lady came down from the States and started to teach them how to make jewelry from items in the junk in the dump, pieces of metal, paper that they would fold up, and they've gotten very good at it. They don't use as much stuff from the dump as they pick up a lot of their items otherwise, but their jewelry business is becoming a real business, and she has a whole pool of women that now work at home and no longer work in the dump. They are selling their jewelry in regular stores in Guatemala City. There are people that are trying to figure out a way to bring that jewelry to the United States. The adult literacy program has grown in the last 3 years immensely. There's a guy group now, a men's group, in addition to the women. It's harder for them because, you know, they don't all work in the dump. They work in other places. So, you know, they work during the day, and then to come to school at night is very hard. But there's a men's group started. And so you see more and more of the school and the project being run by Guatemalans, which is a benefit unto itself, because they're making, I don't know what they pay them, but I can't imagine they're paying them poverty wages. I would imagine
right.
The project is going to pay them better than they would make somewhere else. So all of that is contributing.
It is working. And, you know, that's very exciting to hear. A lot of times, I mean, you just think of this young woman going down there with the money from her car and her computer and saying, I'm going to do something. And look what it's turned into. Even though she is no longer alive, it's still happening. Now I'm getting ready for my favorite question, which is, what would you tell someone who sees a need and is ready to take step one? A lot of people, I think, will look at what can I do locally? What can I do here? And I guess the point of Hanley's story is just start. Just do something. You can just start. Or
build something. Go connect. If it were me and I would had an interest in working, I would find an organization and go and work with that organization as you learn. And once you've done that, if you want to go further, you can go further. There, there's a huge learning curve. But Margaret, I'd like to say something about, because I hear a lot of people say, well, why don't you just send the money and stay here and work? And I've been, you know, I hear that a lot, and I've answered that question a lot.
Good, good. Say that. That's good.
It's not that I don't, and we work here in the States, too. You know, there are projects that we work with. But in many of these countries overseas, two things happen. One thing is that there is nobody else other than us that are going to help them. They don't have the resources. There aren't the means. There isn't the money. It's just not going to happen unless somebody from the outside goes in and helps. There is just no money.
And so how do you answer, well, I'll just send the money? What do you say to that?
The second part of that is, you know, when you show up and they realize that people care, when they realize that it is going to be possible, and you take your expertise in there and can do that, then you start to give them a foothold. But if you just sent the money, it's probably going to get squandered because they don't know how to help themselves a lot of times. It's not that they're ignorant. It's not that they're, you know, that they're slovenly. They just don't have the skills. They don't have the wherewithal to figure out how to put it together. They can't interact with the government, for example. They can't interact with the corporations. They can't do those things that we can bring to them and help them get started. And when we go, we bring a lot with us. You know, we bring a lot of background, and you know, we can go look, you know, I can go to Guatemala and I can look an official, and I'm on even turf with him. I can, you know, he might have a bit more power in Guatemala than I do, but I'm not afraid of him. And he's going to look at me differently than he looks at somebody that just came out of the mountains that's working in the dump. So we bring a lot of power, and I guess would be the word, and a lot of credibility, and that's something that brings them hope. If you watch the video, you see what those women say, and you know they learn to respect themselves. They learn that there are people that care. You know, and as a Christian, that's what Christ wanted us to do. You know, was to go. He didn't say send money.
It is, you know, I have a couple of comments to that, and one of them is, even as a student in college, when we were struggling, a young married student, and most of our friends were young married, people kept saying, I'd rather give money than time. And so to give time is what really makes the difference, because for a lot of us, it's, I'll just hand you money, even for students who had hardly any money at all. How do you respond?
Absolute point, yes.
How do you respond to people who say, well, we have poor people here in America, how come you're going down there?
We do have poor people. And again, you know, I do work in this country as well. We've worked in a lot of different projects. Outside of this country, the level of poverty is staggering. The depth of poverty is staggering. We have a government that there are a lot of programs where a lot of stuff is available to people in our country. Not that I would tell anybody don't work in this country, but outside of this country, it is just absolutely staggering, the level of suffering and poverty.
So it's that is, do the one, don't leave the other undone. Do them both.
Correct. Yeah.
And
more I go. Go ahead.
I don't know anyone who lives in the dump. You know, that's how I feel. I don't know anyone whose kids don't go to school, unless the parents are just too lazy to send them, but not because they don't have the means to get them there. There's always a means to get them there.
And we need to continue to work to prevent that from happening. You know, we do have a responsibility for that, and we need to continue to do that. And it's getting tougher and tougher. You know, the rich and poor factors in this country are getting are swinging badly the wrong way, in my opinion. But outside of this country, if you can go and see it and touch it and smell it, and it's staggering. It's just beyond your belief. And that's what changes people, I think. They don't have a government to protect them. They don't have the infrastructures. They don't have the institutions. They don't have, they have been conquered. The Guatemalan people have been, conquered several times. It's just not there. They will never be able to probably totally pull themselves out of that without somebody else's intervention.
Do you remember the first time you went?
Do I remember the first time? Absolutely. It changed my life. I went to a project in Cuernavaca, Mexico, run through the Catholic Church. I was with my daughter. My son had been the year before, and we went to a squatter's village down next to the railroad tracks. I couldn't believe what I saw. I had grown up in the Deep South, and I'd seen a lot of poverty, but I could not believe what I saw. It changed my life right then and there, hasn't been the same since.
What'd you see?
I began to realize that, the rest of the world didn't operate like the United States. I saw people who had to literally just go squat on land in order to have a place to live. Then I began to ask myself, why can't they get property? I saw, dirt floors and, filthy interiors of tin shacks. Began to realize the crime that engenders when you shove all those people together in unsafe and unsanitary conditions. I smelled it. When you go to the Guatemala City dump, that dump permeates for blocks and blocks and blocks. You cannot believe that people eat and sleep and live in such conditions. It's the being there that changes you. But at the same time, we've been greatly changed because our work in Mexico and our work in Guatemala, we've learned from them. They teach us. They teach us how to hope, and they teach us how to, they have a faith that is beyond what I had. I learned from them because I had a lot, and I would say that my faith was fairly shallow compared to people that I worked with and dealt with, and realized how not happy, and then to have somebody turn around and offer you the only chair that they own, or offer you the only food that they have, or offer you their time. I mean, they would be willing to do anything for you, when they needed to be using that for themselves. And to have somebody do that is just not something that happens in the United States on a daily basis.
Well, it may not happen on a daily basis here, but I do actually see it happen here. People will come from a really poor part of Alabama to come help a Baptist church here. And then the next year, our kids go down. But they head on down, and they're helping. But I think there is something to be said for what you said, for helping someone else. Something changes you. So the two very poor churches have an exchange program, and they're helping each other, and there's something to be said for that.
We have people that come from Atlanta to Moultrie every, spring break. College students come down here to put roofs on houses and help people with their homes. In Florida, we had kids that would go to Key West every summer on their, during their vacation to work with people down there that needed help. Key West, that kind of used to blow my mind. But there are people there that are desperate and need help. They're homeless people. You know, people that go help people after tornadoes. There are so many, you know, there are organizations that work in Haiti. We're associated with groups of people that would go to the Dominican Republic and help build, especially churches. There is so much out there. Habitat is a wonderful organization. Their largest project outside the United States is Guatemala.
Really? I love Habitat. I've worked with Habitat. I helped start the DC part of it. And I would say to my daughters, if you want to meet a good guy, don't go to a bar. Go to Habitat. Like, stay home Friday night, Saturday morning, go to Habitat. You're going to meet a really great guy.
There you go. But I know people that have gone on trips with all of these different organizations as well.
And so sometimes if you don't have the money, other people, like we talked about, there are plenty of people who would rather give money than time, will often support you in going.
Do fundraisers in your church, do dinners, just put your hand out. People will give money. We do that every year we do one of these projects. I did a presentation yesterday at my church on Safe Passage, getting ready for next June. And I think there are a couple people there that wish to go with us. And, you know, the other people, I'm going to expect money out of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't mind asking either, because I know that we have a lot more than other people in the world. So, that's what you do. And you just have to be willing to do it. It takes somebody.
It just takes one person. You know, one person could get that DVD and show it at church and say, here's a project we might look at.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Go for it.
Yeah.
And
okay.
You know, if you have somebody that calls you that, you know, is looking for tips or, they're welcome to give me a call,
okay.
Margaret. Don't broadcast my cell phone.
No, I won't. I have just one last question for you. It's what do you do when everything's going wrong? You know, like I said, I just started a month ago and my computer died twice. Yeah.
Well, bless your heart.
Well, to me, that's like, Nope. Are you going to do it or not? Like, no matter what? Yeah, no matter what. I'm doing it.
Devil always gets in the way, doesn't he? And that's happened to us in Guatemala. I mean, you know, just when we think we were making progress, somebody gets sick or something. There's an uproar in the country or something happens back home. And you have to realize that's going to happen when you try to do good things. Something always tries to derail you. And you just have to pray yourself through it.
Pray yourself through it. And that is a thought worth repeating. Just pray your way through it. Thank you for talking with us today, Charles, about Safe Passage, this wonderful project started by Hanley Denning with just the money from selling her car and her computer that now feeds and educates 550 children who otherwise would be spending all day in the city dump at Guatemala looking for ways to generate income for their families. You can learn more about Safe Passage at their website, safepassage.org, where you can also get a free copy of the DVD, Hands of the Mothers, or Manos de Madre. Thanks for joining us today on In His Footsteps. I'm Margaret Agard. You can reach me at P.O. Box 173, Duck, West Virginia, 25063, or through my website, inhisfootsteps.com. Or link to me through Twitter or Facebook. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Be sure to join us again next week for more practical tips on living a God-directed life and amazing interviews from people who do.